Why should people care about Witch's Hammer? Why should people care?
I don't care what people care about Witch's Hammer. I'm happy that people enjoy it. And if you don't like it, that's cool too. I'm here to do what I want to do. It's my artistic integrity. It's what I like to do. I like to play. I like to write. And that's the bottom line.
And here we have Odd's Crypt coming up with the song called Faces of Death, followed up by Dementia with
Second Death.
Wow!
There's
a lot of death.
I'm excited about this.
Well, thank you very much, Witch's Hammer and Jason from Supreme Echo. Keep on rocking in the free world and doot-doot-loot-doot.
Are you a friend of ours who loves to get discounts? Come down to CIT, all the deals and you can count. We've partnered with some local businesses, so come down to us to get your card before it's too late.
As a member of CITR Discorder, you get amazing deals with some of Vancouver's finest local businesses, such as Devil Mayware, Audio Pile, the Stormcrow Tavern and Ale House, the Biltmore, Book Warehouse, and Little Sisters Book and Art Emporium. For more information, visit CITR.ca/friends.
Say you don't know my name, and I'd rather heard some girl that's that pretty on the side. And you think I'm so crazy, standing up for myself on the daily. To the family, you do not know what I see. Something wrong with you, thinking it's okay to pick her up from school on low. See from my side, tell me when you look into her eyes, is she hypnotized? She don't know better, let her go and say she's better than you. Cause you're 20 years older, doesn't mean you're 20 times better than her. And it kills me inside, knowing you were happier when he was out of your life. And you think I'm so crazy, standing up for myself on the daily. And you tell me all the time, wish you were a dumb girl that's that pretty. You have more potential than me, than her and me combined. Take a foot and then you'll see, between the lines, the line. Still got more to say, this song could last a year if I want it.
Hey,
don't you think it's funny, it's 2018 and you still talk shit about my body. I don't know the way she's looking at her phone, you know she ain't happy. Perfect shape, sure it's an hourglass figure, but hey. And you think I'm so crazy, standing up for myself on the daily. And you tell me all the time, wish you were a dumb girl that's that pretty on the side. And you think I'm so crazy, standing up for myself.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to Word on the Street on CITR Radio, 101.9 FM. I got another intro from someone else who wanted to shout out the show this week, so I'm just going to play that for a second right now.
Yeah. What you got?
This is Sheck West, and this is the Word on the Street.
I just want to thank Nardwar for... for getting that clip. Sheck West endorses the show, so you should be listening to our show too. We also got a little bit more of a tangent clip I wanted to play here from a friend of the show, Teo, just because he worked so hard on this, and I wanted you guys to hear this one, so we'll be right back after this.
Australia, perhaps one of the most isolated places on the planet. And home to the koala, perhaps the best loved of all Australia's marsupials or pouched mammals. Extra thick fur, especially on the neck and shoulders, help protect the koala from even the worst weathers. Opposable thumbs and toes allow for a tight grip when climbing. The koala cools itself by licking its arms and stretching out as it rests on the trees. The koala spends most of its time shuffling around the topmost branches of the eucalyptus tree, hanging on tight with its four grasping feet. It sleeps during the day, curled up in a tree fork, and at night on the leaves and shoots for a few eucalyptus. An adult male will approximately eat 500 grams of leaves a day. The name koala means no drink, and it rarely does so. Koalas only breed once a year. Mating normally occurs from September to March. The baby koala, or joey, is blind, hairless, less than 1 inch long, and weighs less than a gram. It then crawls into its mother's pouch, completely unaided. If the female koala does not reproduce each year, the young stay with her for longer, thus increasing its chance of survival. But of course, none of this is available at CITR Radio, because this is a fake show, and I am not a real host. Thank you for listening. CITR 101.9 FM.
And we're back. Thanks to Teo for that. At the start of the show, you heard a song by Bella Rosses, a friend of mine from my elementary school. That song is called Be Better. She'll have another song out pretty soon. You also heard the intro from Sheck West, the intro from Teo. Now we're going to get into a couple stories. On this day in 1949, the first 45 was released, and that made the jukebox possible. And we are looking at this week, what should we talk about today, this day in music? And both Gabe and Brian had some pretty interesting stories about their dads and some of their stories about their experiences with jukeboxes. So, who wants to go first, Gabe?
Me.
Yeah.
Hello. I had a really good story that my dad was telling me about. He used to own a bar back in Saskatoon, back in good old Toontown. He worked in a bunch of different bars, and they had jukeboxes all the time. And one of the players, like the singles that always kept getting played, was by the Tragically Hip. When they were like up and coming back in like the 70s and 80s. And so when they were on tour, before they got like huge Canadian like icons, he would book them into like his bars and they would play. And funny story, apparently they weren't that nice and he actually didn't like them. So if you ever talk to him, like people are always going on and on about the Tragically Hip, and he's like, yeah, they're okay. They were kind of mean to me, so I don't like them. And that's a bit of the story. I got some other stories that we can tell later on, but Brian has a great one about jukeboxes.
Okay, so here we go. Let's set the stage. My dearest father, it's 1960-something. He's an old guy. Anyway, so, back in the day when he was a teenager, before he had status and before he had a pager.
Why do you always do that?
It's just the best one. I'm sorry. It's there. Anyway. So he was up in the boondocks of Wisconsin on a sailing excursion with his buddies, his college buddies. So there he is. He's, bouncing around on the water. And they found a bar in, like, the middle of this lake. And not in the middle of the lake. On the coast of the lake. No. Anyway, yeah, no. So they hop out of their little sailboat and they walk ashore. And there's this bar, it's popping, there's all this stuff going on, and in the basement of the bar, which is the entrance that they found, there's all these broken jukeboxes. There was, like, apparently just, like, a whole, sea of these broken jukeboxes made by Wurlitzer, and they were all dysfunctional. So my dad and his buddies, they were, like, as they weren't 21, they did not partake in the bar activities, but don't worry. They take these broken jukeboxes. They figured if they took two broken jukeboxes, they could leave with one working jukebox. So they stole these two jukeboxes, put them on their little dinghy sailboat thing, and they sail back to Illinois. And then the rest is history. Now I have a jukebox in my basement, and the thing still works. A little hat tip there.
Talk about jukeboxes in the basement. We got one more for more stories from Morley. Shout out to Morley, my dad, back in Cowtown, Calgary. he threw a party one night, and it was a pajama party, he said, and it started at 2 a.m. And you had to have pajamas and an invitation to get in. But the kind of the crazy part was he took all of the furniture out of the house and then completely soundproofed the basement. And then he had hip and cool friends in the student radio, like us at CITR Word Street. Follow us on Twitter. And he had a DJ from the station come set up his equipment and was like playing records and jukeboxes all night long. So there you go. And you know what else is like a jukebox?
Ox.
The aux cord. Wowzers. Isaac, take it away.
We were just going to touch on that briefly. Hey, Teo.
Hey, everybody.
The jukebox pretty much set the stage for the aux when you think about it, and for playlists themselves. So still definitely relevant when you think about it. That's all on that. Anyway, we got a couple more topics to talk about, but it's already 5:20, so we're gonna play a couple songs. Isaiah, what do you want to play first?
I'm gonna play "Ego" by Bored Decor. They're a local band. You should definitely check them out. And "Power of Two" by Mr. Twin Sister. It's a funky tune, so good.
Great. We'll be right back.
Life moves slower than stimulation, so just can't rest till expectations set are exceeded or met. Ego. Who found you? Don't forget. Don't
All right. Welcome back. Right now, I think we're talking about Juno nominations, specifically a lack of Juno nominations from one Canadian artist, Drake. So apparently, the word on the street is that Drake didn't submit anything to be nominated for Juno Awards. And I'm just kind of wondering why. Like, why, man? Does he think he's too good for it? Does he want to give other artists a chance? What do you guys think?
I think it's kind of strange because he seems to love representing Toronto so much. Maybe he thinks he's going to win all of them and he'll feel kind of bad about it because it would just be like the mainstream choice. Historically, I don't really know the bias with the Junos, if there is an obvious bias. I mean, I wish I paid attention more, but I'm going to say I don't. That's my thoughts on it.
I feel like Drake also has like a history with like Choice Awards, like the Teen Choice Awards. Like one of the lyrics in one of his songs is I'm not a teen choice or something, and I feel like that's something he has mentioned not being completely in favor of, just kind of being something that people just vote for and favoritize like that. Might have something to do with it.
I mean, like 2 years ago or 3 years ago, he got like all the Juno Awards, like literally like six or something. So I don't think it's like, I think he just doesn't care because who watches the Juno Awards really? I've never watched them. Like even True. If you like Brian, he's from the States. He didn't know what the Juno Awards were wow, until like man. 2 seconds ago.
It's okay. Way to call me out.
It's
I
not
see.
Calling it's okay. you out. It's calling the Junos out. And I don't think, even though, like, Drake repping the six and whatever and, like, making Toronto super relevant all across the world is, like, a big thing, he's not that loyal, I think. Like, what, he used to go to every Raptors game. He literally has a chair in the Air Canada Centre in Toronto for him, for Raptors games. And where is he now? Lakers games. All the time. With LeBron. So I don't think he cares about Canada. I'm just saying. Yeah.
I also, like, I feel like it could be something to do with, I don't think he got a lot of support, like, when he was emerging from the Junos. Mm-hmm. Which is something that you see from like a lot of emerging Canadian artists.
Mm. He's probably just upset.
Having I don't know. I heard this, there was this exact same discussion on like CBC Radio this morning.
Oh, did
so they? And funny enough, Cadence Weapon, who we've interviewed in the past, is on cue. So apparently Drake, based on that, what they were talking about, hosted the Junos in 2011, and he was nominated for something like seven categories and didn't win anything, or seven nominations and didn't win any of them. So I think Cadence, or the other host, was mentioning that maybe that was a reason why he doesn't like the Junos, because he's apparently the only host who was nominated for something at the Junos to not win. I don't know.
He hosted the Junos?
Yeah, in 2011, apparently. Yeah. So I don't know. But also, back to the first discussion, I guess, like, I don't know. I think it's better for Canadian, like, less-known Canadian artists. We don't need, like, our one or two big names to dominate.
Yeah, because I feel like it's like the Junos is a really good opportunity to give people who don't get as much exposure, like, that extra little boost. Mm-hmm. So I feel like Drake just taking away all the awards definitely leaves a lot of room open for other artists who are just more, like, trying to emerge.
Yeah, it's cool for us, too, because we've actually talked to two people who have been involved. I mean, I don't know if Cadence, was he nominated at all?
He said he submitted on the show, but he didn't get nominated. He was,
okay.
He kind of was a little funny, a little salty about it.
I mean, we talked to Cadence, or you and Jonah did last year, right? And then a bunch of us talked to Lou Phelps, but
at the Junos,
yeah, before the Junos, and it's interesting how like they're so in reach, like those artists, like we literally just talked to them, but to imagine like talking to Drake to do like a pre-Junos interview is like, I just can't imagine that at all.
We wouldn't even be there though, too.
Yeah,
I think typically though the Junos focus a lot on like indie artists and like, if they're smaller, they're usually indie artists and not rappers, which is ironic because I think, like, Toronto's whole thing is, like, all... There's a lot of really good R&B artists and hip-hop artists coming out of there, but I feel like they'd rather, like, talk about Headley or something. Like,
they're not, anymore.
Like, really... Not anymore, obviously. But they're not, like, in tune with, like, what's actually doing well, I guess, from Canada.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's kind of like a catch-22, like, it's a toss-up. Do you want to complain about it or not, really? Because Drake really only cares about the Grammys, because that's where, like, the largest audience following is, and so that's why he would care more about that than the Junos. And so if we're saying the Junos like respect smaller audiences more, and Drake wants like a bigger audience like and more like rep with the Grammys, then it shouldn't be anything to complain about. It's kind of like Drake giving people space, but selfishly in a way. He's given the opportunity for others to shine when he wants to shine more, I guess, on a different stage. Anyone else want to say something?
Can I have a random question?
Yeah. Sure.
Yes.
Do you like Scorpion?
I don't like Drake.
Soldier.
I don't find him appealing at all. That's my opinion. Yeah, he can make a catchy song, but I just don't like him overall. And it's not because like my best friend is Soldier Boy or something like that. But I just don't find him appealing. I think he's pretty overplayed, no matter what. Even if you're a Drake fan, you have to admit that. But also overrated for what he is. Because I don't consider him really a rapper. I mean, yes, sometimes, but overall, no. Caribbean lounge music. Yeah, Caribbean lounge music, sure.
Isaac, coming in with the hot takes. How could you say something so controversial?
I don't like him.
So brave.
Well, you guys can say whatever you want. I don't know if you guys like him or...
You know, in my feelings, I'm a fan. I'm just saying. I like him. Drake's cool.
But I mean, like, I think Drake makes more radio, like, more radio-friendly music. Yeah, like, he's kind of, like, pop, hip-hop style. He's going to try to appeal to the biggest, like, common denominator. So it's going to be not very, like, I don't know. I don't know if you would say he's inspired. I don't necessarily think so, but that's just my opinion.
Well, I think Scorpion is an example of not really caring about the art as much and just trying to reach the biggest audience possible. Because it's, what, how many, 22 tracks? Something like that.
Yeah.
So I don't care for that. I would rather have someone like him make something that's 10 tracks long and actually put something new into it, because it just sounds the same over and over. Like, who's actually going to listen through the hour and a half, even if you're his biggest fan?
Yeah. He's definitely an artist that's become designed for anthems. For sure. He, like, even though his albums are strong, like, his singles are stronger. And you can't deny that, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can, like, if you ask just a random person what the word on the street is about Drake, I'm throwing in all these puns today. If you ask someone about Drake and, like, name his albums, people would be pretty challenged, I guess. Like, the average pop listener would be challenged to name his albums, but they could name many singles with Drake. He just dominates that field of the music industry, and you can't deny that. Like, he's everywhere in singles and features and stuff like that.
Yeah, my opinion also, I don't think Sicko Mode would be a meme if Drake wasn't there. I think it would just be a Travis song, but because Drake is there, it makes it sort of satirical, and he just accentuates that so much.
Can we return to your assumption about the 22 track list?
Something like that. I don't know if that's for
because
sure.
Because I totally agree about the fact that Kanye destroyed it with the 7-track system with his previous, like...
But you prefer that.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's been crazy. Hits on hits.
Well, I think that, like, shorter albums, they kind of show there's a lot more thought that goes into it, and there's a lot more, like, of an elimination process. Like, this, we're going to try to make... We only have so many songs, like 30 minutes. We're going to try to make it the best 30 minutes possible. But like with Scorpion, with so many tracks, it's like there's so much room for just mediocrity.
Yeah.
I like the whole short album trend, by the way.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of these artists, have any of you seen Drake live? Did anyone go to Drake?
He showed up at The Weeknd once when I was in Toronto, which I think is, like, pretty standard practice if you have, like, a lot of, like, features with an artist. I thought he was all right. I've seen him in real life, like, maybe twice. Once at a Raptors game, you know, he had, like, one of those. What was going on? There was, like, all these rumors about him and Rihanna at the time, and I think he had, what do you call those things where you wave them to, like.
Foam finger?
No. Like, flag? They're, like, you blow them up.
Oh, like the clapper things.
He was clearly bored. He was clearly on his phone, and he had like this clapper thing. And then like when I think Rihanna's song came on, he did like, you know, like that like awkward like Drake dancing. He gets like, he moves his head a lot. He gets like really into it. I don't know. I thought that was kind of cute. And then he kind of came up at The Weeknd, you know, took some of the thunder. But yeah.
So how did you find him like in concert compared to like when you listen to him, because that's what we want to talk about next.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So the concert performance, it wasn't the type that was, by the way, excellent transition, Isaac. That was just phenomenal. But
that's host-worthy material.
I guess that's why I'm here.
A fan of Drake's newest stuff, I'd say. I like some of his old stuff because I grew up near Toronto, so it has a lot of nostalgic value for me, stuff like Fancy and all that, but
yeah.
I don't know. That's a good point about, like, I think there's a distinction that needs to be made before we get into this about kind of, like, when mainstream artists perform live after listening to them recorded, and then when some more, like, indie bands, like, perform live that don't have the benefit of, like, extensive production in the studio. One funny thing that can happen when you're having, like, a mainstream artist that you've listened to quite a lot, like, come out live is that sometimes they lip sync, or sometimes their voice just isn't quite the same without auto-tune. And a lot of time they have like the benefit of like extensive sets, like structured dancing. You've got like these like amazing professional dancers, and they have like a whole routine, and they're very practiced. Mm-hmm. But the story is completely different for some smaller artists. I'm sure Brian has something to say about that, or somebody else.
Well, you wanted to talk about Fashion Jackson.
I can also talk about Fashion Jackson. I think Gabe, why don't you give that a start?
Well, let me tell you. Fashion Jackson, they're awesome. I mean, oh man, so there's this if I may, there's this venue, and it's called the Bog House. It's my buddy's basement. His name's Robbie. Shout out Robbie. Shout out the Bog House. Place is super sick. But the other day, he was organizing this really small house show, and one of his buddies, he's in this band called Fashion Jackson. They're from San Diego. They're pretty big. They're on the come up. But they were like, hey, we're playing in Vancouver, except the venue we were playing at just canceled on us. Can we play at your house? And obviously the Bog House boys were like, hell yeah, that is super sick. Anyway, so Fashion Jackson played. I had no idea who they were going into this show. I was just like, oh, like, cool. Fashion Jackson, that's a funny name. It's like Action Jackson, but wait, hold on. Fashion. That's so – these are some quirky boys. So I was so excited, you know, just because of the name. And, man, I pulled up. Those boys brought the energy. They brought the, you know, just everything about it was super sick. Honestly, like, one of the best performances I've ever seen in my life. It was grungy. It was, like, kind of gross. It was really sweaty. But there was just, like, so much energy involved. And, like, everyone was, like, on board. And being able to see what Fashion Jackson was, like, as they played, you know, just, like, really added to their music. And, like, I went back and, like, listened to their recorded stuff. It's all right. It's okay. But, like, seeing them live just, like, brought that extra edge where, like, you suddenly, like, understand so many more layers to, like, their music.
Agreeing with Brian, I would argue, in the case that you haven't seen the musician before, people always sound better live. Like, if you see them because, like, of the energy and, like, it's just loud and, like, things just sound good when they're loud. And then you, like, listen to it later. And it always kind of makes you, not always, but it'll make you a little sad just because it's not as, like, energetic and, like, doesn't give you the same feeling. But if it's live and recorded, that's a whole different story. It usually sounds worse. Not worse, but, like, emptier, maybe.
Well, I think being in the crowd, it definitely adds to the experience, like, all the energy. But, like, listening to a live recording, like, because you're not actually there, it's so distracting to hear all the fans, like, cheering and stuff. But once you're actually in it, because, like, everyone around you is just giving off this super chaotic, like, good energy, like, they're just enjoying the music, you kind of feel like partaking in that. I feel like that amplifies your experience a lot, especially of, like, their performance. And if they're, like, good performers, that's even better.
I don't know if they're good performers. I actually really I like live albums. I really do. Bruce Springsteen came out with a live album a couple months ago, like on Broadway, and it's great. It's really good. Like, he's like, you're almost in the theater. Like, it's you and the boss just chatting away. So I really like live albums, and especially like the whole energy comes out, I find a lot. Like, albums are great because they're so crisp and clear and the transitions are nice. But part of my favorite parts of like the concert is like the mistakes and the little slip ups, and when the artist forgets that one line or whatever, or they spill like a water bottle and they gotta stop mid song and clean up or whatever. I like that stuff. I don't know, but yeah, definitely going back to Isaiah's point, like people who perform live and like add something to their music, it just is a lot like a more immersive experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think for me, going to like really big shows, like arena shows, like Travis Scott or Kendrick, the thing that makes it that much better is the production of all the visuals and everything. Both the guys, wow, they like fire. Pyromaniacs right there. They really like their flames. Only complaint I had about Travis's set last week, and he did this last time I saw him too, he only does half of some songs, and he'll just cut it, and I don't know why. Like, 90210, his second verse on that, the second half of the song, is one of my favorite, like, pieces of music from him. Both times I've seen him, he just cut it. I'm like, come on, like, I want to see that, like, I love that verse.
Yeah, a lot of big artists do that, I find.
Yeah.
They don't need to play it anymore. Like, I mean, how original is it after a certain point not to be salty? But also, it's like people get the point after you do, like, the first verse and then, like, I don't know, some variation of the bridge and then the chorus. It's like they're good. You can move on to the next one because you want to get the critical number of hits in to appease the crowd before you move on and then, like, roll your new stuff, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I would put it this way. Since you're a fan of Frank Ocean, it's like if he did the first half of Nights and then he cut it.
He was also...
like, that would suck.
He did. Okay, so I saw him live, I think, really? The summer before I went to university. I did. Yeah, I see I could have gone. It was at this festival called Way Home that I believe is taking a hiatus right now. And they're a few hours outside of Toronto. And I don't know. Like, that was a really strange experience because the best part about that was, I think, the connectivity that you got with the feature that was, like, so elusive. I was on my friend's shoulders and he looked in my general direction once and it just made my whole month. But, like, generally, yeah, he was very, you got, like, a lot of his personality coming out. He kept apologizing. He was like, oh, sorry, it's, like, I've only done, like, 4 shows in, like, the past, like, whatever, I haven't performed since, like, 2013. And, of course, everyone was like, yeah. But one of the best parts is because there's some, like, parts of songs where he's walking up and down the stage. He's just, like, performing, like, being normal. And then there was this one part where he went and he sat in the center of the stage, like, with the band. And there were, like, cameras on him so you could see him all around. And he started to perform, like, a lot of his way more, like, emotional songs. And I thought that was just great.
On the other hand, I never listened to JPEG Mafia before I went to his Vancouver show recently. But I found that his show kind of put me on his music. Like, I tried getting into his music before, but I could never really. But I think the energy he put into the show, like, you could just tell, like, he really loved performing, and he just wanted to, like, give off that energy to the crowd. And you could tell the crowd was getting the same energy, too. And then, like, afterwards, listening to just the studio recorded version, I could kind of, like, it reminded me a lot of his performance. So I think just... not only listening to the studio version first and then hearing the live version, it's like it could also have good benefits the other way around.
So I know Icia was mentioning before that live music is, I think, better for most people. Like, we can agree that most people would like to see their artist live, even though they like to enjoy it, like, in their private time. But I was thinking, like, what is it about, like, live music that makes it, like, so enjoyable and so important to us? Because a lot of us, like, have had iPods, like, since we were kids. It's, like, very normal. Or maybe a parent had, like, a record player or a CD, like, et cetera, et cetera. And there's... or a jukebox.
Tying it
really
back.
I wish we had that, like, but like, sound effect that we could just play whenever Gabe mentioned jukeboxes. But it's it's like this feeling of, like, connection that I think kind of, like, evolved so that we could have that extra social connectivity. Like, way back in the day, like, when people were, I guess, like, more so hunter-gatherers, it's, like, music was probably originated as a way, like, it's just a way to, like, bring, like, lives together. Like, people would sing while they were working, like, they'd, like, learn how to, like, as they were making tools, they'd be making instruments, and then, like, during, like, spiritual and religious rituals, there would be people, like, telling stories or, like, conveying ideas in, like, a performative song sense, and I think that's where music came from. So in order to, like, have that connectivity, I think live music is, like, the closest that we can get to that, even if it's just, like, jamming with your friends or going to a show.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think there's something very intrinsic and innate about it. When you're listening to a song, like, through this wire that connects to your phone and you're hearing their voice, even if you love it, it's never right in front of you. It's only auditory visuals, right? And then when you see that person that you really admire, like, you're the biggest Kendrick fan, and then he's right in front of you, even if you're far away, and you hear it live, you hear his voice, and you hear him speaking in front of you. It's very actualizing. It's very surreal. You know, I feel like there's definitely a concert high or a music high of some sort. Often when the days leading up, I don't even think about the concert, and then the day of the show, I get so hyped up. I feel like this energy, and when I'm there, is definitely indescribable, I would say.
I'd say it also depends on the situation. I mean, if if you're listening to your own music, you've kind of got your headphones in and you're just listening to something relaxing as you're falling asleep, I feel like it's a very different experience from when you're in a large room with loads of people who are as passionate as you about a musician or about a song, and everyone's kind of singing along with the musician or with the singer, and there's this atmosphere of like collaboration and just unity between you and everyone who's there, and between you and this person who you're watching, mm-hmm. who hopefully you admire or who you've, you know, waited a long time to be in this situation with.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that is something special, which, you know, as great as it is to listen to music when you are by yourself walking around or in the shower or whatever, but it is this, you know, sometimes even once in a lifetime opportunity where you get to share something that special with the person who made that music that makes you feel certain emotions or brings back certain memories. Or,
yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, some people don't like live shows, and those people are like cool to talk about too, because I know there are some artists where you go to the show and you end up like feeling like a little bit like a half of like, like just this feeling of like disappointment, like maybe something was missing. And some artists, I really think that they sound better like just the recorded version. And it can depend on the setting too. Like I've seen Unknown Moral Orchestra twice, and the time that I saw them outdoors, it was like a set at like 12 in the morning at a festival, and it was really nice. Like it was just like connected. The music was like echoing all around. And I think that because the music that is recorded, it's often recorded onto tape. It's very small scale. It sounds a little bit like claustrophobic in a sense. But I mean, outdoors is like a different way to experience music that I found to be positive. But inside of a theater, I found it to be a bit of an unhappy medium. Like it wasn't atmospheric, and it wasn't like that interesting like claustrophobia thing. The show was still incredible, but something was missing. And I wonder if like not wanting to listen to the music live has to do with wanting to preserve that element of control over like what you're listening to, because improvisations are fun and entertaining for lots of people. Some people are just like, they just don't prefer them. Like they'd rather like have that experience replicated with better quality. And sometimes like improvisations are just not better quality.
That's funny you say that the festival environment, you prefer that over the like the theater environment. I actually quite prefer the like theater environment over festival, just because of some like bad experiences I've had over like festival sound. Because festival sound is, I find the further away you are, the better it is. But when you want to be close up to the actual artist, if you want to wait 12 hours all day, I remember I did that once to see a show, and one of the acts that were playing, she wasn't who I came to see, but I was, I don't know, maybe 10 rows back from the barricade. It was Halsey. And it was Halsey. And when she played, they had to turn it up so loud to like, for everyone in the whole festival to hear, that the bass was so loud that nobody for the first, I'm gonna say 30 rows, could hear anything she said. The bass was so loud, our shirts were physically rippling. It was insane. So she was cool, good stage presence, but I didn't hear a word she said all like hour of her set. Too loud bass, could not handle.
I'm not saying that I prefer festival environments per se. I more so meant that for the specific like style of music that's like recorded to like feel kind of like closed and small. I think I do like prefer the festival environment a bit, but I think it depends on the artist and like how they translate. Like M83, if anybody like knows M83, they have a very like expansive, beautiful sound. Them outdoors at sunset was a life-changing experience. And then maybe them indoors wouldn't have been that cool, because their music would have just been too contained and it wouldn't have been the same thing. And then James Blake is somebody else who I've seen like indoors, like at night, like in Massey Hall in Toronto, just the nice electronic sound like really translates well to a small theater.
I just want to correct Shanae on the pronunciation of M83. It's actually Matey 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, just building off what like Gabe was saying, I was thinking about this earlier, just about like local live shows that are smaller, usually in like maybe kind of like unofficial venues. And it's definitely like, I guess, as what Brian was talking about, when you have that experience, it's nice like live. But if you want to, like, especially, I guess I feel bad for the singers or vocalists, because more often than not, like, there's no, like, professional audio equipment or mixing for sure. So you're not hearing them. And, like, and until you, like, check out that band you saw live and, like, their stuff on Spotify or wherever, and you get to be like, oh, this is like, it sounds completely different. And like, they're both enjoyable to me, but it's like nice when you can like hear the polished version of it next to like the live version you saw that's great for all its own reasons.
We've been talking about quite a few different artists today. And I want to introduce a new segment on the show called Gem of the Week. And for this segment, what we're trying to do is represent some underrepresented artists. That means they can be from a group that is not usually in music. They can have a disability. They can be from a group that their sexuality is very underrepresented. Anything like that. They can be a popular artist. It doesn't matter. Just as long as the artist has something unique about them that is sentimental to us. So I want to do the first Gem of the Week, and we would like to do this every week if we can. Alternating weeks, who's going to bring the song and the artist and what it's about. So for mine, my older brother has autism, and I'm taking a psychology class on ASD, Autism Spectrum Disorder. And what my prof does is at the start of every class, he plays a song, and somehow the artist is on the spectrum in some way. They might have Asperger's, they might have some form of autism in some way, loosely related at least. So I wanted to play a song from The Vines, and their frontman, Craig Nichols, said he has Asperger's, and I just thought it would be important to represent those people who make music too and give that sort of significance to neurodiversity, because that's something that, in my opinion, is not talked about enough. So Isia, what's the song that we're playing from The Vines?
It's called Killing the Planet off their album Wicked Nature.
Thank you. And I think after this, we'll be pretty much done. We'll be back again next week. Same time, 5 p.m. You're listening to Word on the Street. And Gabe, yeah, CI Terror Word Street.
Alrighty, folks. It's been a great week for our Twitter account. We have gotten, I think, 2 new followers this week. So good job, everybody. Yeah, so great. Follow us at CITR Word Street. Join the chat. Send us pictures of graffiti. That's the word on the street. Bye.
level up. As quick as it's off of my Tanuki the bear and they doing the flip. Munching the flower, the fire I spit. Smoking the sour, the higher I get. Yeah, turtle shell for the blast off. Beggar's blade for the damn guard. About to face each your ass off. With Luigi and he mad strong. Big chains rattling. Swamp gang back again. Noises in the attic. Catching static from the shadow men. Hoping maybe that's the wind. Get low, Ralph Lauren. Galloping battalion. About to battle ram your castle in. Alpha and Omega death. Creatures under basement steps. AB start select. Architects of ancient threats. Cowards creeping, but then freezing when you turn around. No dignity, no diggity. Faux diddly, we burn it down. Hey, yo, four doors be branching. Like Winchester Mansion, mind expansion. Inside a phantom, fly the banner. Yo, you winning now. That it'll turn your hair white. Don't turn your back, it's a trap. Would've been better in a fair fight. Roll the dice, pull the dice, get hype. Roll the vice, brought my own flashlight. My homie Yoshi, loads of pipe. Locals, they never stay there overnight. Ghostbusters, not police. Rock the Cooper in his dome piece. My producer got dope beats like Hoji Kondo sipping on that OE.
I'd like to save you, Koopalings, but I just remembered something. I have an important tail styling appointment in another war zone.
Yeah, we in the house. We take the phantom to the range. We in the house. We scoop your baddie from the flames. We in the house. We take the phantom to the range. We in the house. We scoop your baddie from the flames. We in the flow through with a dark spot. Big eyes for the star watch. Got the tool like it's Dunlop. 30 on them from a young wop. Scary spiders in the back like. Big fangs, act right. Wario in the lab, right?